First, I have no financial relationships to disclose. I am not funded by any pro or anti-fat organizations. All right, so for most of you, you probably have heard or read somewhere that there are connections in women between body image and sexual health. So there has been a lot of research, both mostly quantitative, that's looked at, you know, if one feels negatively about her body, she's more likely to experience negative sexual health outcomes, such as an increased risk of STI or HIV infection or unintended pregnancy, oftentimes through less promotion of agency in the sexual situation. In more of the affective realm of sexuality, you often find women who feel worse about themselves tend to experience less desire, decreased pleasure, less frequent orgasm. Now, that relationship has been pretty firmly established. When you look at actual body size, which is not always congruent with body image, you know, there's lots of folks in the world who meet normative body standards who still do not like how they look. But there has been research that looks specifically at larger body size and sexual health outcomes. And that relationship has found to be really mixed. So the studies that have been done that have found larger body size to be related to negative sexual health have often been conducted in weight loss clinics or women who are seeking bariatric surgery. So the confounding variable there is someone who is already in that situation is experiencing body negativity, but that is not necessarily accounted for in those relationships. So when you look at women of higher body size and actual sexual behavior, you find that there's a huge variety of sexual experience, just like there is in every other aspect of self and identity. That some women of higher body size report having more frequent intercourse or increased likelihood of ever having had a partner. So what we tend to find in the existing quantitative research is that it's how a woman feels about herself that tends to be more salient to her sexuality outcomes than her actual body size. Yet oftentimes the prescription for mending this relationship is for the woman to change her body size, which is incongruous and doesn't really follow logically. And we often also find that the voice of body positive women, those women who are not feeling negatively about themselves, are really missing in this literature so far. Now, if we take for granted that body image and sexuality are social experiences, we aren't born with a body image. We aren't born knowing how we're going to interact with others sexually. They're shaped by interpersonal, intrapersonal, cultural factors. Then qualitative methods would be a good way of exploring the relationship between these two phenomena, because what we're seeing downstream negative outcomes in people's sexual relationships based on body negativity. But we don't necessarily know why, and quantitative studies aren't always able to tell us. So qualitative methodologies can offer insight into the nature of these mutual influences between sexual health and body attitudes. So the study that I did, and I'm only going to be presenting part of it today, this was actually a much larger study where I had about 500 women enrolled in a daily diary, and of those 500 women, 20 of them participated in qualitative interviews. So I did semi-structured interviews using Skype. Each of the 20 women was interviewed twice, once on body image topics and once on sexuality topics. For example, during the body interview, I asked, "Tell me about an experience you've had where you've received positive reactions to your appearance. What was the situation and how did you know the reaction was positive?" One of the questions I asked in the sexuality interview, and I actually prefaced this question with, how many of you in the room remember the Victoria's Secret ad that had the tagline, "What is sexy?" Does anyone remember that? And then they said, "What is sexy?" And then they told you, "Here, this is what is sexy." So I said, well, you know, this is what Victoria's Secret thinks is sexy, but sexy can look different to different people. If you were asked to answer that question, what would be your response? So I'm only going to be discussing four of my participants today, and I'll explain a little bit about why this is, the goal of the study was not generalizability. So the four participants that I chose were all women who identified as having non-normative bodies. So one woman described herself as big, another described herself as fat, actually two described themselves as fat, another as overweight, and I did have the actual body weights for these women because they participated in the larger quantitative survey, and these were all women who listed, self-reported their weights as being well over 200 pounds. So it's a small sample size. However, with many qualitative projects, the goal of analysis was depth and exploration of meaning rather than population-wide outcomes or generalizability. As you can see from this table, three of the four women were familiar with the ideas around health at every size and size acceptance, but their reactions to those movements were very different. So the way I analyzed this data is I had a thick record, which was the verbatim transcription as well as field notes. And the goal of my analysis was really to determine what claims the participants were making about their worlds, what worked in the worlds as they saw them. So to look specifically at their sexual health experiences and the explicit or implicit connections they made between their sexual health and body image. So the way that I did that is I took certain speech acts and coded them based on their meaning. So when I said that the goal of this was not generalizability but rather depth, I wanted to give you an example of just one person's interview data. So one of my participants, this was Dee Dee, and what I did with each participant is I mapped all of the claims that they made about the world and then how they related to each other. So this is a map of Dee Dee's world. So even I could possibly have written just about Dee Dee and the way that she saw the world and what she saw as being shoulds or oughts or this is how I identify, and it was an immense amount of information. So the depth was really quite both alarming and intense. So obviously qualitative methods require validity checks. We want to make sure that what the researcher says happened actually did, or that they're not completely making up this data out of thin air. So I wanted to explain the validity checks that I went through. So my transcription was verbatim. There was no interpretation to that. I also had peer debriefers, so two colleagues who were familiar with this method but weren't part of the project went through and looked for systematic bias in my coding and or coding that I may have missed. And then I also had member checks, so I sent meaning-dense portions of the transcripts to my participants with my interpretation and asked them basically to clarify, was there anything that I misinterpreted you in saying here? Is there anything that was wrong? Did you mean something different than what I'm saying that you're saying? And I got a very positive response from my participants. Actually, one of them asked if I would send her the entire interview with all of my interpretation. And this was an hour and a half long interview, and I was coding pretty much every speech act, so it would have been possibly a 100-page document. So I said, I'm sorry, I can't do that right now. Maybe after I finish my dissertation. This was for my dissertation. Okay, so these are my results. And the way I have this laid out is the things that everyone agreed on were kind of the background codes, and then it moves forward. So, for example, each of the women in their interviews in some way said that they recognized the cultural expectations for women's bodies, whether or not they met them. So they knew that there were ways that they were supposed to look like. They also, each in one way or another, described themselves as not having that body that they were supposed to have, that their body was not normative. And when I asked them about sexiness, you know, we oftentimes, well, Victoria's Secret tends to think of sexiness as being very visual. But in fact, all of my participants, and this went across not just the women of size, but across the other participants, almost everyone said something related to self-confidence. Very few people, if any, mentioned anything about a physical aspect being what is sexy. So, for example, when I asked Sherry, she said, when I asked her what she considered to be sexy, I never really actually thought about it. I think it doesn't have as much to do with looks, and it has to do with someone's attitude. I'm not one of those people who actually ogles others, but when it comes to something like that, it's more how they carry themselves, their attitude towards themselves. So these were claims that all the participants made independently. But then the group split in terms of how they thought about their own sexual appeal. Two women looked internally for validation of their sexiness, so they looked to themselves to determine whether or not they were attractive to others. So Lane, for example, said, "I'm not interested in dieting, and I'm not interested that you think that I would be much prettier at a size 10, which is like totally not going to happen." So she wasn't looking for other people to tell her her worth in terms of her attractiveness. She knew what it was already. The other women were looking externally. They were looking for other people to validate that they were sexually viable, that they were worthwhile in the world. So when I asked Dee Dee to tell me what she found sexy about herself, her response was to tell me what her previous girlfriend liked about her body. So she says, that's where I'm getting those answers, was from what her previous girlfriend had told her. The last person I was with commented on how curvy my legs were, and she was a boob girl. So when I asked her for her own thoughts about them, she couldn't really provide them. So these women who said, looked internally and felt a sense of self-worth made claims about, that they believed that other people found them sexy and that they accepted their bodies, which led to them overall saying, "I am sexy, that's just who I am." On the other side, these women, and remember this is completely independent, these women never spoke to each other, "I don't believe others find me sexy, I want to accept my body, but I struggle, and I'm not sexy." So Dee Dee said, "It's really hard for me to say, I'm sexy. It goes against everything that I've been taught." So there were certain claims that came out of, "I'm sexy, I know I'm an attractive person." The women who said that had certain expectations for their sexual partners and for their sex lives. They expected their partners to be skilled and generous. They knew what they wanted. Sex was for fun and pleasure, and sexiness is not about appearance, but it's inherent in me. I'm running a little short on time, so I'm not going to go through all the quotes. But the women on the other side said that they felt disconnected from their sexual bodies, that having someone actually be attracted to them was alarming to them, and they didn't know how to deal with it, that their discomfort with their bodies impacted their ability to be sexual with someone else. And both mentioned that their motivation for beginning partner sex was not about pleasure, but instead was about pressure. Both mentioned their first sexual experiences as their partners wanted to. They didn't really, but they didn't know how to say no, and they weren't comfortable doing that. So Sherry said, "At one point in my body image, my opinion of myself was so low that I was actually on a website online meeting guys randomly that I'd never met before just to have sex." And Dee Dee was talking about, in this quote, she was talking about masturbation, and she talked about how she didn't like to touch her own body. She only would use toys rather than her hands because she didn't like to acknowledge her own body in that sexual situation. She says, "I don't look down. I look at the ceiling, and it's almost like I'm trying to imagine that I was thinner, that I imagine my stomach was flatter, which sounds bizarre, but I guess that's what I'm trying to do." So the women who looked externally for people to tell them how attractive they were, they wanted to be like the women on the other side who had an internal sense of self-worth, but they didn't really know how to get there. So ultimately, the women who did not value their bodies because of body insecurity struggled with acceptance of their sexuality. They explicitly said that their body size and appearance hindered them from having the sex lives that they wanted, and they specifically mentioned a lack of sexual agency with partners and engaging in unwanted sexual activity, not being able to say no when a partner wants to have sex, having sex with someone that they wouldn't necessarily have chosen otherwise, not necessarily using contraception, even though they would have liked to. So there were very explicit negative sexual health outcomes that these women mentioned. On the other hand, those women who expressed that their bodies had inherent personal and social value claimed to be more comfortable with actually being sexual. They were able to say that they were able to be selective about choosing their sexual partners, and they experienced less dissatisfaction and regret. So what I termed this was, I saw this as being the advent of an idea about sexual health at every size. Now, we're talking about women who, despite recognizing all these cultural expectations for women's bodies, so they know what women are supposed to look like, and these are women who don't meet those expectations, they still were able to move past that and to say that they expected sex to be for fun and pleasure. They expected their partners to care about their sexual needs and desires. They knew what they wanted and that they felt confident in and of themselves. Obviously, there's some limitations to this. If we're talking about sexuality as a social experience, where it's dyadic or possibly, more than two people, I was only getting information from one person. I was not interviewing couples. And this small sample size offers pretty in-depth information, but lacks any generalizability. So I think the implications of the study are that body positivity may have served as a buffer against negative sexual experiences for women in this study, and that high levels of investment in meeting normative body standards were being articulated as being directly related to negative sexual health outcomes. So a sexual health at every size perspective, which promotes acceptance of all body sizes, may directly and indirectly improve sexual health outcomes in women. There's a lot of conversation about the idea of female sexual dysfunction, that women don't seem to be experiencing orgasm or pleasure at the levels that we would hope that they would, then that sexuality is holistic, it's not simply about physiological measures, and that, when we look at prior research, that again, it's not necessarily about a woman's body size, but how she feels about that body that is implicated in her sexual experiences. So promoting sexual health at every size may indirectly or directly improve outcomes without relying on weight loss, which we found to not necessarily work in terms of improving women's sex lives. So I have my references if anyone is interested. Contact information. Thank you very much.
Okay, so
analysis.